Well, germs can't live in alcohol, right? Forgive me? A few seconds later, he ducked his head toward her to ask, if you're afraid of germs, how does kissing work? She blushed and took a moment to think of an answer. I've known you a whole day. For all I know, you're crawling with all kinds of cooties. He smiled timidly and glanced away. Do you really think the alcohol will kill the germs? I guess that does make sense. Some of them, anyway, right? Paul seemed dumbfounded, as if just realizing how much she really meant it. She took another sip of her now hard lemonade. This really isn't bad. I can hardly taste the alcohol. Reese, you're from Utah. Are you Mormon? Christian from Canada interrupted Paul and Reese's staring contest. No, she turned her attention to the crowd around the table. Contrary to popular belief, not everyone in Utah is Mormon. I happen to know there are at least three of us that aren't. She'd used the joke many times, but it never failed to get a laugh. Where is Utah? Peter was Norwegian. Western United States, between Colorado and Nevada, Reese answered. Vegas, Mitch said quite enthusiastically with his Irish brogue. Yep, I live about 7 hours from there. Oddly, the other girls at the table had become very quiet. Utah Jazz, Asif from Israel added what he knew. Karl Malone. Yeah, we have that too. The island really did attract a variety of cultures, and she liked the diversity. Paul sat quietly through dinner. Reese kept catching him watch her, wanting to know why, what he was thinking. The germ episode forgotten, it drove her crazy again, wondering how and when he would make his move and how she would handle it, afraid she wouldn't know how to handle it. She decided to be grateful for his gift of alcohol, even if he planned it as part of some sinister plan to get her drunk and into his bed. She didn't think she would have made it through dinner without it. She'd never been much of a drinker. When she turned 12, her parents started letting her have watered-down wine on special occasions, and to be a good sport, she'd learned to gag down a beer with her dad during the Super Bowl, on St. Patrick's Day, and the 4th of July. But that was the extent of her experience. After dinner, the group moved to a bar called Tanked, the perfect hangout for all the dive shop people, because it sat on the water and reminded everyone of the shop. The bar opened up to a large deck that was similar to the deck at Paradise Divers. Quaint, like everything else on the island, and like everything else on the island, it had a slightly dirty feel about it, at least in Reese's oversensitive-to-germ state of mind. When she refused to allow herself to think about the griminess, she enjoyed the laid-back and comfortable atmosphere. Nice as far as bars went, in her experience, which was very limited. "You changed your mind?" Regina said, pulling Reese aside. "About what?" Reese asked. "That kiss! You trying to get Mr. Paul to jump them bones of yours now?" "No, you know I'm not." "Then you, of all people, should not never be playing with fire that way." "I was just trying to do what you said, trying to not act like a..." Reese gave up. She would never get it. Regina shook her head. "I don't know what more I can do for you. I think you need a full-time babysitter, but that sure as hell is not never going to be me." It stung that Regina had already figured her out. She was a baby, the very reason she came to the island in the first place. She needed to do something out of her comfort zone because it was time to grow up. As the night progressed, everyone settled in on some activity. A few eventually left and went to other bars. A couple went home, and some sat at a table with other people on the island and talked. Tracy and Regina started up their favorite late-night pastime, a game of dominoes. "Reese, play with us," Tracy urged. "Oh no, I've never played." Reese held her hands up and shied away, as if they'd asked her to hold a snake. She watched them for a while, thinking she might learn how. It looked simple enough, and if she could figure it out before she played, she might be able to join on another night. It didn't take long to give up. Not going to happen. She'd convinced herself she had some sort of mental block about games. Growing up, it seemed everyone, except her, knew how to play every game already. When she did play, they would tell her she should have made this move, or she couldn't make that one, and she always came in tease-worthily last, even on the games she thought she understood. She finally got to the point where she'd freeze up inside and fill with dread whenever someone suggested a game night. She'd become an expert at coming up with excuses for staying home with her parents instead of hanging out with friends. Even that wasn't always safe. Her parents often badgered her to play with them, some made-up version of Rummy, their favorite Friday date-night activity. Reese wandered around the bar again and found a bookcase filled with books. The sign said, "Take a book, leave a book." She'd just finished a book on the plane and needed another, so she looked the titles over and took one, making a mental note to bring her old book back the next time she came to the bar. The sun set around 5:30 all year round, she'd been told. The island's proximity to the equator and no daylight savings time changes meant that by 11, it seemed like it had been dark for a long time. Reese moved outside, found an empty table on the edge of the water, and sat down. The bar had lights in the water around the deck, which offered a comforting glow against the dark night. She stared out for several minutes, taking in the beauty of the clear blue water. It almost made her excited to start diving. Almost. Movement in the water startled her, and she saw a flash of black dart by, into the light and then out again, just as quickly. She heard splashing beyond the lights, but couldn't see what caused it. She stood and moved to the edge of the dock and squinted, trying to see. Suddenly, the reason for the disturbance came into view, and she froze. "Reef shark." Paul came up behind her, startling her and making her lose her balance. His fast reflexes helped him grab her before she fell into the water. "Shark!" She hung on to him, scared to death that she might end up in the water with it. "I didn't know there were sharks here, except for the big, docile ones that don't eat people."
"We don't see them often. That one's just a baby looking for table scraps."
"I want my money back. I can't get in the ocean with sharks." Paul laughed, and his eyes seemed to sparkle more than usual in the glow of the lighting.
"You'll be lucky to see any sharks while you're diving, except maybe one or two of the big, docile ones that don't eat people. We do have quite a few whale shark sightings here."
He took a couple steps back, with her in tow, until they were away from the edge before he let go. She pulled her chair a little farther from the edge and sat down, watching the water warily. He sat in the chair facing her.
"If you get eaten by a shark, I'll give you your money back."
"Thanks. If I'm inside the belly of a shark, I won't have much need for my money anymore."
"That's the policy and the very reason for it," he laughed again.
"I don't make promises I don't keep, and I promise you will not be eaten by a shark."
She noticed the way he drawled on the word "not," but her heart still raced, her fear of the ocean overwhelming her thoughts at the moment. She closed her eyes and took a deep breath. "You can do this," she said under her breath.
"You're still alive, by the way."
"Barely. I almost fell in. He'd have eaten me, and I'd be the inspiration for the next Jaws movie. Which one are they on now? Jaws 30?
"I'm not talking about the little shark," Paul laughed. "If you'd fallen in, the splash would have scared him to Australia. I meant the germs. My cooties haven't killed you."
"Oh, yeah, surprisingly," she tried to laugh. "Since coming here, I've been forced to discover all sorts of germs aren't quite as deadly as I once suspected, but I still don't think I'll ever get warm and fuzzy over the little critters." She had to close her eyes and clear her thoughts on the matter before she needed another shower. She'd also discovered how much she didn't like taking showers on the island. Apparently, news about the invention of water heaters hadn't reached the island yet. The waitress, a young, pretty girl, showed up and asked if Paul wanted to order. She ignored Reese. Paul ordered a beer and looked at Reese expectantly.
"I'm buying. It's the least I can do since it's my fault your rent is higher than you anticipated."
A Diet Coke." The waitress looked confused.
"Coke Light,"
Paul told the waitress. She lit up with recognition and walked away.
"Coke? I thought I was a better teacher than that."
"Well, you asked if I was an alcoholic. I'm not, but only because I throw in a lemonade or a soda every once in a while." She made him smile.
"Why are you here if you're so afraid of the ocean?"
She glanced down and pursed her lips, thinking of the easiest way to explain. "It's a dull story."
"My favorite kind."
He flashed a warm smile. His eye appeared to wink again, but during dinner, Reese had figured out that his right eye twitched on its own, a kind of facial tic. Images of straight men and jealous boyfriends not taking kindly to stray winks from a man who looked like Paul made her smile for some reason. She'd also already figured out that he used his left eye when he winked on purpose.
"I'm a good listener. Try me."
She laughed.
Okay, but remember, as your eyes gloss over with boredom, it's your own fault.
I don't do boredom very well. I'll tell you to stop if it gets too unbearable.
He stared, waiting, and she realized that staring was also a normal thing for him. He had beautiful eyes, and he obviously knew how to use them. Well, when I was little, I was at a friend's house when I saw this documentary on TV about diving, and I thought, man, I wish I was that cool. The problem is, I'm not cool at all. I'm a big baby. I never do anything exciting because I'm always too chicken. When my mom died, the pain of losing her mother felt fresh again, but she'd trained herself to work through it. It forced me to think. I realized I didn't want to die knowing I never did anything with my life. I remembered wanting to scuba dive, so I promised myself I'd go someplace exotic and do it. Someday. But deep down, I knew I never really would.
But here you are.
The waitress showed up and set their drinks on the table. She lingered momentarily, watching Paul, as if hoping to get his attention. When he didn't give it, she finally walked away. She glanced back once more, and Reese didn't understand the dirty look she gave her. Is the waitress mad at me for not knowing how to order a Diet Coke? Paul finally glanced in the waitress's direction and let out a sigh.
No, she's mad at me. So, what happened to make you dive in?
He winked purposely this time. My dad died a few months ago. Reese looked down and tried not to let the sad thought ruin the rest of her night. He named me the only beneficiary on his life insurance policy. It wasn't much, enough to bury him, put his affairs in order, and there was a little left over. I had a choice. I could either finish school or come here, the cheapest exotic place I could find to learn to dive. She laughed, though she felt more like crying. I read online the rooms were cheap and you could eat for $1.50 a day here. I'm beginning to realize the internet might have exaggerated a bit.
A bit, but it's pretty close if you like fruit and baleadas.
I do, she giggled. I had a baleada for lunch. They're delicious and cheap.
Main staple here, and sorry again for raising your rent, but have you seen Strawberry Hills Estate? The name is kind of deceptive.
Kind of?
Her eyes grew wide. The place is a magnet for the lowest degenerates on the island. There aren't many of those, but I'm just saying.
I did see it. Please don't apologize. You did me a huge favor.
Good. I'm glad you don't hate me.
The intensity of the way he looked at her made her hope she wouldn't blush. But then he looked away and released her before she did.
So you were left with a chunk of life insurance money on your hands.
Not a chunk, more like a morsel. She played with her Coke bottle to distract her from thinking too hard about her loss as she explained. I didn't even know he had insurance. He always said he didn't believe in it.
I don't want anyone looking forward to me dying so they can have a party with my insurance money.
She changed her voice to imitate her father. She laughed briefly and then looked down, trying to hide from Paul how sad she must look.
I'm sorry for your loss. It's hard to lose family.
I'm sorry. Your family's gone too?
No.
His laugh sounded a little sardonic, but I haven't seen them in a while, and I have no plans to. His face contorted into a frown.
Wow. I haven't even thought about them in years.
His eyes turned cold and hard, no longer the inviting blue color of the warm tropical ocean.
I don't dwell on the past.
So you ran away? Are you by chance my long-lost brother who ran away from home when I was 10?
God!
The serious look in his eyes changed to one of revulsion. He stared at her warily.
I hope not.
If what everyone had said was true, he'd probably had a few unsisterly thoughts about her. They locked eyes, confirming they were both thinking the same thing. A few awkward seconds passed until he finally broke into laughter, making his eyes sparkle again. Reese threw her hands over her face in an attempt to hide the blush she felt creeping in.
If you run into trouble money-wise, let me know. I have ways to help you earn a little extra if you get desperate.
What? Reese misinterpreted his offer.
A loan. I'll lend you money. You can pay me back when you return to the States. Get back on your feet.
He looked desperate to clear up any misunderstanding about accusing her of being willing to prostitute herself.
Or a job. I know people. I can get you a job. You could even help out around the shop. That's all I meant.
Thanks. I might need to take you up on that offer. The job offer. This coming here was probably not the most practical choice, but I had to, you know? No more excuses. Bite the bullet. Pull my big girl panties up. Her eyes flashed to meet his, suddenly embarrassed to say panties in front of him. She blinked a couple of times and then remembered her point, which made her sad again. Change of scenery and all that. It's hard losing everyone in your world. She looked away to rein in the tears, threatening to fill her eyes again. Things are going to be tight enough as it is when I go back. I don't want to have debt hanging over my head. Paul nodded to show he understood. It's late. I'm tired. I'm not used to this wild party life.
This is a wild party?
Paul smirked, obviously amused. It is for me, she smiled sheepishly. I might be a little jet-lagged, too. All I've been able to think about for the last 2 hours is climbing into bed, and I would have by now, but the truth is, I can't remember the way to Oceanside. She squirmed uncomfortably at having to admit to being lost and unable to find her way home. I'll never find my way in the dark without Tracy and Regina.
They'll most likely be a while. They stay out late, sleep in late. They're supposed to be working on their dive master, but they never sign up to be on the boat in the mornings. Even when I do schedule them, they don't make it.
His brow creased and he leaned forward as if he wanted her to listen carefully.
For future reference, before those two become a bad influence on you, you have to make the boat to earn the certification.
He sat back again and grinned after emphasizing the last few words.
Most of my students can't afford to take so long to earn their certifications.
Once they're finished, they can earn a little money, working with the guests. Guests tip their dive masters. But those two, I think they're more interested in the social life than results.
Really? Reese couldn't imagine having enough money to stick around just because she liked living on the island. I wish I could stay indefinitely.
Really?
It was his turn to sound surprised. I have no money, no job. I've been taking care of my dying parents for the last few years. Now I have no family, no home. There's nothing to go back to. This?
She waved her hand over the surroundings and put on a regal air. The splendor of this dingy bar called Tanked, and by that I mean the island as a whole.
She giggled but then shrugged her shoulders and sat quietly for a second, fingering her bottle of soda. Change of scenery.
You'll figure it out, he assured.
Yeah, I'm sure I will. She looked over at Tracy and Regina and giggled again. But first, I need to figure out how to get back to my apartment.
You really are funny.
Paul laughed, but then he leaned forward and rested his elbows on his knees. His mouth twitched. He seemed nervous and didn't look up, but when he finally did, his eyes met hers. The look in his eyes? She felt the butterflies fluttering in her stomach and moving up into her heart. She couldn't look away. And finally, she understood why all the other girls were so in love with him.
I don't usually do the asking. This is out of my comfort zone, but you could stay at my place tonight.
His eyes cast down to his feet. He finally did look up again. His eyes flashed hypnotically and yet uncertain as he waited for her to respond. Her heart skipped a beat. No. Several beats, and she opened her mouth to speak, but her words failed her. Reese, breathe. She gaped. He arched a brow at her, but then he looked down again, releasing her from his spell as if he'd suddenly become self-conscious. That's it? I've been freaking out all day, waiting for a quiet, polite request? Reese, you're such an idiot. Look, Tracy and Regina told me...
Please, don't believe everything everyone says about me.
He interrupted her, desperate, she thought, to set her straight about what people had been telling her. She felt even worse now that she knew she'd fallen so easily into the gossip web. She always thought she did a better job of avoiding that type of thing. Disappointment welled up in her. She was no better than the others and vowed to be more careful in the future.
It's only 98% true. The other 2% is complete bullshit.
It took a second for his words to sink in, but she burst out laughing. She leaned forward and whispered to him, the way he had to her at the restaurant. You're funny. One side of his mouth hitched up, but he still seemed unable to look her in the eye, like a shy, nervous little boy.
What do you say?
He finally asked, quietly. Wow, yeah, I did hear a few things. She nodded and cleared her throat. Actually, Regina said I shouldn't tell you, but...
Somebody should probably warn you about Regina. She tends to live on the paranoid side of the street. No one knows for sure what her deal is, but she sees conspiracy and intrigue around every corner.
Oh, I kind of wondered. I seriously didn't know if it was her or just me. Paul smiled, making her take pause again. Okay, but you see, you've been very kind and helpful. Oh my gosh, I've never had to do this, but I can't sleep with you. She wanted more than anything to stop stammering and just get the words out right, but they weren't coming very easily. She'd never had to have this conversation before. It's not you. You're very good looking and you've been so nice. I would, or I think I would, if I was normal. She narrowed her brow, contemplating how unnormal she was. But sometimes I think I don't have a normal bone in my body. She tried to giggle. You see, the fact is I just don't sleep with men.
Oh.
He looked surprised or caught off guard.
Oh,
he said a little louder than before as it sunk in.
I didn't pick up on that you were... That's why you didn't hover.
He stopped and didn't finish his sentence. He seemed thoroughly baffled. His lips twitched while he played with the idea.
Wow.
Yeah, I've been one my whole life. She laughed at her own little joke about being a virgin. Isn't everyone until... they're not? She giggled again. He tried to laugh too, but he looked confused. Wouldn't it be bizarre if everyone just announced that sort of thing every time they introduced himself? Hi, I'm Reese and I'm a...
Hey!
He held his hands up, hurriedly striving to let her know he didn't judge her.
It's all good.
He seemed to be concentrating.
Maybe I'm not very aware of that particular thing, but I don't think there are many of you on the island.
That didn't surprise her. Tracy and Regina were quite positive I'm the only one. She giggled again, but then they were quiet for a second. Can you tell me which street I'd turn on to get to Oceanside? I should really get some sleep. Paul got up and grabbed a piece of chalk from the chalkboard on the wall just inside the bar and returned. He drew a map on one of the wooden planks on the floor.
This is a map of all the streets on the island. All five of them. We're here on the main street. If you go east on this street...
I'm sorry, could you just say right or left? I happen to be directionally challenged, as well as all the other stuff that's wrong with me. He grinned and explained his map again. When he finished, he asked,
Does that make sense?
Very much. I shall never get lost again, kind sir. She giggled and felt very grateful, which she showed him with a smile. She regretted all the angst she'd felt toward him all day. Serves me right. She thought how wrong she'd been to so readily buy into all this stupid gossip about him. He's really just a nice guy, an extraordinarily beautiful, with eyes that just suck you right in kind of guy. Paul was nothing like the moody, angry, somewhat scary and intimidating, oversexed, ego as big as a whale kind of guy, the type of man who would never let himself feel anything for any woman because he was too self-centered and egotistical and in love with himself. A man who could never settle for just one woman because he could have as many women as he wanted type of guy. No, Reese felt proud of herself. She'd discovered, on her own, that Paul was nothing like the type of guy everyone said he was. I guess I'll see you at the shop in the morning. She stood to leave and walked away.
Hey, he called after her.
She turned back to see what he wanted.
Since you're the minority here, if you ever find yourself with unmet needs, I could help with that. You know, if you find yourself feeling tense or desperate, if you have a good imagination.
He had a devilish grin on his face.
I could manage to, you know.
He stuck the tip of his tongue out and wiggled it back and forth before a huge, brilliant smile broke across his face.
It could be our little secret.
She forced a smile and pretended to understand so she wouldn't look stupid, but she was convinced she was. She walked away, headed home, and unsuccessfully tried to figure out for a second or two before she grew shaky and anxious. She turned her attention to facing the ocean the next day. She had to concentrate to steady her nerves. Paul picked up the unfinished Coke Reese had left on the table and drank it down.
Lemonade, Coke, the other team. What a shame.
He shook his head. He glanced back toward the bar and saw Tracy and Regina still deeply involved with their game. He startled Tracy by leaning down and speaking directly in her ear.
"It's after midnight, and I don't have a date."
"Are you asking me?" She sounded much too hopeful.
"I could have had one by now if you'd given me a heads up. I wasted my whole night on Reese."
He jabbed her with his elbow, teasing her for not warning him. Tracy looked rejected and unsure why he blamed her for his lack of a bed partner for the night.
"You knew and you didn't tell me,"
he waited expectantly, with a grin, but she didn't catch on.
"You should have told me Reese is a lesbian."
The light of understanding brightened on Tracy's face. She seemed more than eager to set the confusion straight. She chuckled. "Reese isn't a lesbian. She's a..." Regina threw her hand over Tracy's mouth and glared at her.
"Tracy, shut up!"
She pulled Tracy up without removing her hand from her mouth. Regina smiled sweetly at Paul and batted her eyes the way she always did when he caught her staring.
"Come on, Tracy. It's time to go home."
She turned and smiled at Paul again as they walked out of the bar. It took a second for him to think it through. He smirked, but then his jaw set. He folded his arms and the muscle in his cheek twitched as he watched them walk away. Chapter 4. The next morning, apparently Tracy and Regina preferred sleeping in over being on the boat again, as Paul had mentioned. Reese had never been one to sleep in and didn't like tiptoeing around the apartment, trying not to wake them. She stepped out onto the large porch and looked out over all the trees. From her third-floor apartment, the view was stunning. She could barely see any buildings at all through all the treetops, and she could even see a sliver of the ocean on the horizon. A flock of wild parrots flew overhead and landed in the jungle to her left. "I could live here forever," she said, nodding to herself. The walk back to the shop didn't seem as long as it had the first day, and she actually enjoyed taking in the sights of the island she'd be calling home for a while. She couldn't believe she lived on an island. There were a few creepy, not well-cared-for homes along the way before she reached the main street, but there were some cute ones, too, all on stilts. She wasn't sure why. Some were only a few feet above the ground, while others were built high enough up that the owners used the area under the houses as patios. While most of the buildings were constructed of raw wooden planks, a few were painted after all, painted mostly in vivid turquoise or shades of pink. One home, her favorite, sported a bright lime green with purple trim. The blooming orange flamboyant tree in front added the final touch. Reese, when asked her favorite color, didn't have just one. She'd answer, purple, orange, and lime green. She loved the way the three looked together, but she'd never dreamed of painting her home with them. The house made her smile. Her third day here, and again, she felt herself starting to really like this island. She decided to explore a little since she wasn't expected at the shop until that afternoon. At this time of day, early morning, the main street seemed almost deserted. There were a few homes lining the street, but mostly businesses, mostly bars. There were a lot of bars. There was a strange mix of nicely constructed, well-maintained buildings, and some that were run down and unpainted. Dirty. Small grocery stores, produce stands, a couple of pharmacies, beauty shops, a few souvenir shops, several bakeries, one real estate office, a small medical center, and a lot of restaurants, including snack bars, the island's version of a fast food drive-thru, but more like a walk-up-to, since everyone was on foot. Again, the simplicity of it all warmed Reese's heart. Even after her little exploration of Main Street, she reached the shop before anyone else. It seemed deserted. All the doors and the shutters on the windows were open, and she could hear the drone of a motor running nearby, but she didn't see anyone. She poked her head into the office, unoccupied. She sat on the bench under the awning next to the office and pulled her diving book out to study.
"You're late." Paul burst from the office and walked by without stopping. "Follow me."
"Late? For what?" She jumped up and ran after him. She caught up, but he fiddled with something on the boat, so she waited.
"What are you doing standing around like a fucking idiot? Start bringing tanks to the boat."
He looked up and seemed annoyed by the confused look on her face. Hurry! We're going to have divers here in a few minutes. Idiot? Wow, he really is moody and scary. She looked around, trying to figure out what he wanted her to do.
I said to start bringing tanks around.
What tanks? He swore again, calling her an idiot, muttering the slur just loud enough for her to hear.
Go around to the other side of the shop to the tank room. Dobbs is filling tanks. You carry the filled tanks to the boat so we can go diving. That's what we're all doing here. We need 16 tanks. Put them in these slots.
He pointed to the tank slots that lined the sides of the boat. Is he mad at me? Maybe he's just stressed out and needs a hand. Sure, anything I can do to help. She headed to the other side of the shop and saw Dobbs take a tank off the noisy compressor and set it on the floor with several others. Are these the tanks that go on the boat? The compressor roared deafeningly loud. Dobbs wore earmuffs. He saw her and lifted one side, so she repeated her question. He nodded. She'd never done this before, so it took a minute to figure out the best way to carry them. Dobbs reached over and demonstrated how to grab them by the neck, and then he smiled kindly at her. He seemed like such a nice man. She grabbed one of the tanks the way Dobbs had shown her. Man, these are heavy. She'd seen people carrying two at a time the day before, but she'd never managed to carry two all the way around to the other side. She took one. Dobbs shook his head but didn't stop filling the empty tanks. After three trips, Paul came around the corner.
What's taking so long? We don't have time for this shit.
They're heavy, she said. He glared at her and stormed off to the tank room. She met him on her way back. He had one tank under his arm, one in that hand, and another in the other hand. He glared at her again as they passed each other. Jiminy, moody is an understatement. She went back for another and had just set it in one of the empty slots when Paul showed up with three more.
This is going to take all fucking day. Stay on the boat. I'll bring them to you and you put them in the slots.
He irritably handed her the tanks one at a time, and she set them in the slots. He glared at her as she struggled with the job. By the time they finished, her arms hurt. She thought she was going to die. Phew, what a workout. She smiled at him, hoping that now that the job was finished, he could relax. He glared at her and walked off. She wanted to crawl away and find a rock to hide under. What is his problem? Everyone scheduled to be on the boat that day finally showed up, and again, the dock came to life with all the activity. Reese watched, trying to learn, and she waved to all the divers as the boat pulled away. She wouldn't have anything to do until the boat returned, since Shelley, her instructor, had headed out to dive. Reese's next lesson wasn't scheduled until the afternoon. Claire showed up after the morning rush and went directly into the office. Most of the students not scheduled to dive never showed up until the boat returned, unless they were scheduled for the dreaded tank duty. Reese wandered into the office to say hello. Good morning, Claire.
Good morning, Claire mumbled back enthusiastically, in hopes of getting rid of her.
Reese stood in the office for a while and watched Claire move about the office. Claire swore under her breath about having too much to do and not enough time to do it.
Is there something you need? Claire asked, and not pleasantly.
I hate not having anything to do. Is there something I can help with? Reese asked. Claire was taken aback.
You're joking, right? Well, ha-ha, she snapped. Not funny.
You just looked like you could use a hand, and I have nothing better to do.
No one's ever offered to help me before.
Claire looked around the office. There was plenty to do, but she looked for the job she hated the most.
See those T-shirts in the boxes under that counter? They're all messed up. Paul pulls them out when customers want to buy one, and he never folds them before putting them back in the wrong box.
I've got it. Reese moved behind the counter, sat down on the floor, and started folding and organizing the shirts.
Thanks.
Claire watched for a minute, still amazed. Paul came through the tunnel, a narrow hallway between the office and the door on the other side of the shop, near the compressor room.
Claire, have you seen that motherfucking new girl? He asked gruffly.
Reese froze. He obviously didn't see her behind the counter.
Claire sat at her computer and turned slowly, wondering if she'd heard him wrong.
What did you say?
I'm looking for that bitch Reese. You told her about the board, didn't you?
What in the bloody hell is wrong with you today? Claire asked. Reese is new. She won't be on the board for a while.
Paul shot Claire a cold, if looks could kill, glare. She's on tanks and bathrooms. She already fucked up tank duty this morning. If you don't explain the board and get her on the bathrooms in the next few minutes, I might just kick her ass and finally fire yours. If it weren't for Dobbs, I'd have done it a long time ago.
Claire stood and returned his stare with the same vehemence he sent her.
Dobbs isn't the reason I'm stuck in this hellhole of an office all day. If you want to be in here instead of me, go right ahead. Fire me, you wanker, she hissed.
Explain the damn board to her, Paul boomed. She'll be on the same duties until she can learn to do her part around here.
He picked up a clipboard, wrote something on the page, and slammed it down on the counter before walking out. Claire looked at Reese with wide eyes.
What the hell did you do? She said each word with emphasis.
Reese searched her mind for the answer.
I don't know. Nothing.
She thought of one thing, but that couldn't possibly be it. I didn't sleep with him. Her voice was hoarse.
Claire's furious expression changed to admiration.
Come on, I'll show you everything you need to know around here. You and I are going to be chums.
Chapter 5 4 days later, Reese arrived at the shop at 5:30 in the morning. She wasn't scheduled to be there until 5:45, but she was sick of Paul telling her how late she was every day. She would show him by showing up extra early.
Dare you to tell me I'm late today, Mr. Grumpy Pants.
Paul had been treating her horribly. She never knew anyone could be so cruel, and she never would have believed she could hate anyone before now. She cried herself to sleep the first few nights and wanted to quit, but Claire urged her not to give Paul the satisfaction.
He thinks he's punishing you, she said. You've said you don't mind the work because you like to keep busy, so do the work and just ignore his foul disposition. It'll drive him bonkers. And I like having you around. Please don't give up.
Next to burying both parents within such a short time, it was one of the hardest things she had ever done, to stay and deal with such an unpleasant situation instead of running away. Claire had been right. Knowing that he wanted to break her brought out her stubborn side. It kept her going. She made it a game. She'd never been a game player, but it spoke of satisfaction to some unfulfilled part of her to play this one. If she offered to sleep with him, the last thing she would ever do, he would win. If she quit and ran home, her normal tendency, he would win. She wasn't experienced enough to know how to come out the winner, but she was darn sure he wasn't going to win either. She could do grumpy. She didn't like it, but she was used to it. Her dad had been a hard-headed, strong-willed, and quick-to-tell-you-his-opinion kind of man. Her friends were scared of him, but as hard and scary as he could be to deal with at times, he was protective of her and made her feel safe. And then there was one sad fact always in the back of her mind. It seemed easier to stay and put up with Paul than to face her reality so soon. She no longer had a home to run back to. The experience had actually turned into a good thing for her, and it didn't take her long to realize it. She had to search deep into her character for a stronger part of herself, a willful side that refused to give up, for once in her life. That's why she came to the island in the first place. She didn't expect to find it quite this way, but she convinced herself that the situation with Paul turned out to be more helpful than she'd anticipated her once-in-a-lifetime adventure to be.
Ha! I beat him.
The lock still hung on the office door, and she reveled in her triumph. She checked the board and sighed aloud. Paul still had her on the same duties, the worst ones at the shop. She didn't mind that as much as not seeing her name scheduled to be on the boat. She was ready. She'd finished her bookwork,
had watched all the videos, and had taken and passed all the written tests, as well as all the underwater drills. She'd even passed the swimming test, her greatest concern. She'd never been a strong swimmer without fins, but the salty water of the ocean made her more buoyant than she'd ever been in a swimming pool, and it had been much easier than she'd expected. She would be officially certified as soon as Paul scheduled her on the boat so she could get her 5 dives in the open water. However, Paul and Paul alone decided who went out on the boats each day, and so far, she'd never seen her name on the board, except under the chore chart. 14 students at the shop, and for some reason, hers was the only name that ever came to mind when he thought of tank schlepping and bathroom duty, but the last one to be on the boat. The whole thing was insult enough, but she stared at how he wrote her name on the board. Bathrooms. Denaria. She reached into the chalk box, grabbed a piece, and climbed up on the bench. She used her fingers to erase the name she hated and wrote in Reese. She stepped down and brushed the chalk off her fingers, beaming with satisfaction. She looked at the section of the board where students wrote their names to sign up to be on the boat. She'd written her name there every day, but Paul had so far blatantly ignored that fact. It gave her an idea. She erased her name as Reese and wrote in Denaria. Maybe that's the problem. She laughed at herself, knowing it wasn't true, but a thrill shot through her, anticipating how it would get to Paul. This could be bad, she thought, but she didn't care. She walked around the building, feeling a sense of relief that she had a few minutes to enjoy being there without Paul's fuming eyes constantly scrutinizing her. She reached the other side of the shop and decided to check the bathroom. She could at least run the toilet brush around the bowl and sweep it out, so he wouldn't have anything to complain about. She didn't think to wonder why the door was open and walked right in. Paul jumped and almost fell off the toilet seat from surprise when Reese came barreling through the door of the bathroom and screamed. He let out a string of cuss words. "What are you doing here so early?" No one ever showed up early. He had no choice but to try to diffuse his embarrassment by acting annoyed. "No sense in wasting your timely arrival. Open up." He tossed her his keys. "Shit. I suppose you're going to have a lot of fun telling everyone about this."
"About what?" She sounded convincing as she walked away to unlock all the doors and turn on the computers in the office. He shook his head in disbelief. He'd figured out she was probably too nice to use this embarrassing situation against him. At least, she pretended to be.
"Yeah, I bet it'd embarrass you more than me to tell everyone about this," he muttered, knowing she couldn't hear him. He reached for the toilet paper. "Damn it!"
was only the first in another long stream of obscenities when he realized his childish antics had finally sneaked up on him and bit him in the butt, almost literally.
"Denaire!"
he started to holler, but suddenly there she stood, leaning against the door jamb, not looking his direction, but holding a roll of toilet paper, spinning it around on her finger with a smug look on her face. "Need this?" She didn't do a very good job of suppressing a knowing smile. "At first I thought you really needed to start rationing toilet paper, make people come to the office to get their, what do you think, 5 squares? Because, you know, we really go through it around here." She smiled again, pleased with herself. "But then I had this idea, a suspicion, really. I started marking the rolls before I put them in the bathroom, because we did go through it so fast. Somehow the same rolls mysteriously show up back in the locker. It's the weirdest thing. I think you may have ghosts, a real poltergeist." In spite of his position, she dared to turn and give him a very disappointed, disapproving glare. "I don't understand why an intelligent guy like you needs to act like such a big baby."
"I am big, and women call me baby all the time. They call me God a lot, too," he smirked.
"You're only building my case, you big baby."
"I am not a baby."
R2,
am not.
R,
not.
She rolled her eyes and tossed the roll of toilet paper to him. She had the shop all opened up, ready for the others to arrive, and sat waiting at the compressor to start their morning routine.
Paul walked to the freshwater shower provided for the divers to rinse off after their dives and washed his hands as Reese watched with a look of wonder on her face. He glanced around, trying to see the problem. "Why didn't I think of that?" She threw her hands in the air and smiled at him with wide eyes, as if he'd just invented water. "All this time, I've been trying so hard to ignore the fact that there are very few public bathrooms on this island and even fewer sinks. It's been hard enough to know I can't always wash my hands, but everyone else, ugh." She stuck out her tongue. "I can't even go there." The next thought popped into his head before he could stop it. Why does she have to be so damn cute? Paul went to work filling tanks while Reese schlepped them to the boat. It had become their routine. It wasn't fair for him to make her do it day after day. Bathroom and tank duty were the worst jobs at the shop. But she never complained. She also never noticed how he'd stopped having Dobbs or Mitch show up early to help, so he'd have the time alone with her. She picked up two tanks and carried them off. She'd never managed more than one before. He actually grinned with admiration. Having her at the shop to help those extra few minutes left them with time to spare, and the two of them wound up awkwardly staring at each other. He certainly couldn't let her have the satisfaction of besting him. He thought about what other dirty jobs he could have her do. The only thing that came to mind was his daily computer work. He hated what he called his dailies. As office manager, the dailies were originally part of Claire's duty. She did them for about 2 months after he bought the shop, but one day she declared she wouldn't do them anymore. She flat out refused. He threatened to fire her, but she called his bluff. Without her, he'd have to do all the office work, and that meant he'd never see the sun again. A thorn in his side, he told himself he only kept Claire around because she came with Dobbs. Dobbs was a good man, and with the exception of Mitch, he was the best friend he had on the island, as well as the only person, together with his wife, he trusted to take care of things when he couldn't be around. The Dobsons had been at the shop as acting managers, trying to save up money to buy it from the aging owner when Paul happened onto the island 3 years before. Paul had been wandering the world when his travels brought him to the island and the shop. He felt a burning need to stay the moment he stepped off the plane. He bought the shop out from under the Dobsons, paying cash, one of the many reasons for Claire's disdain toward him. Claire did her job very well, and as much as he threatened on occasion to fire her, he didn't want to lose her help. He had no choice but to tolerate her bad attitude until they saved enough money to buy their own shop someday. He didn't mind the fact that it would take a while for them to do so. "Come on, I have a new job for you," he said to Reese. He led her to the office, "and if you touch my board again, you'll be sorry," he said in a simple, matter-of-fact way. "Oh, really?" she answered sarcastically. "What are you going to do, put me on your crap list?" He looked at her from the corner of his eye and had to bite the inside of his cheek so he wouldn't laugh. He sat down at his personal computer and paused a minute, deciding whether he really wanted to do this. He finally gave her his password and started showing her how to do his least favorite job of all. That afternoon, Reese pulled Shelley aside to ask another question. She'd finished her lessons, but until she successfully did her open water dives, Shelley was officially still her instructor. Since Paul purposely denied her the dives she needed to get certified, Shelley was stuck with her. Reese always had a questioner, too, and Shelley did her job like a professional, but everyone knew Reese wasn't Shelley's favorite person. Tracy and Regina believed Shelley to be jealous of Reese, a sentiment shared by more than a few of the other students as well. Shelley was one of Paul's favorite sex mates. No one else, except some girl named Ginger, had been known to come close to being a girlfriend. Apparently, he made his position on relationships very clear. He wanted nothing more than sex, and being the most gorgeous man in the world, he got away with it. Girls practically waited in line for their turn. In Tracy's never-kept-a-secret opinion, Paul had been with every pretty girl on the island. Only a handful of girls held the honor of being his repeats, or regulars, and at the moment, Shelley held the position as the winner with the most notches in her belt. Tracy also seemed to think Shelley felt elevated above the others for that reason.
She acts like the queen bee, Tracy said.
Shelley was very beautiful. Reese wondered what it would be like to be so perfect. Perfect face, skin, hair, and body. Perfect like Paul. The perfect couple. However, Tracy's gossip on the matter confused Reese.
Why would Shelley be jealous of me?
Krista, Doreen, and Britta were pretty, and also on Paul's list of regulars. It puzzled Reese how they could all be such tight friends. It was like belonging to some private club. Paul's Coitus Club. Reese smirked at her newly coined name for the girls. She concluded that as long as Krista, Doreen, and Britta didn't forget that Shelley was the president of the club, it all worked out somehow. There were other girls on the island who belonged to the club, too, but it seemed easier for those girls. They didn't have Shelley around all day, reminding them who held the position as his favorite. Paul couldn't walk down the street without girls approaching him. Everywhere he went, they flocked to him. It was no wonder he was so sexually active. How could any guy resist such easy offerings?
Bleh,
Reese cringed. She wondered why any woman would debase herself with a guy like him. She found the idea disgusting. Yes, he might be the perfect physical specimen of a man, but Reese believed there were better, more important qualities that made a man attractive. Shelley explained ambient pressure again, something Reese continued to struggle with. Paul came around the corner with a girl from one of the other dive shops. They laughed and horsed around, making it impossible for anyone not to notice them. They worked their way to the end of the dock, where Paul took the girl in his arms and gave her a long, passionate kiss. He looked back at Reese just before he pushed the girl into the water and he jumped in after her. He dragged the girl, who continued to giggle all the way, to Frock. Shelley watched as well, obviously not happy about it. She gave Reese a dirty look and stormed off.
Frock, Tracy leaned toward Reese and spoke discreetly. I get it, Reese said dryly. See, no one can really see anything.
Tracy acted as if it was perfectly normal, almost admirable. Reese turned, refusing to watch. It didn't matter if she couldn't really see. Just knowing made her nauseated. She stormed off, too.
It's official, Reese complained when she came back from lunch, her tone loud and resigned. There isn't 1 ounce of peanut butter on this whole freaking island.
Peanut butter, several people said at once.
That stuff is disgusting. Why do you want peanut butter? Tracy asked.
Are you kidding? It's a main staple for me. I might have to go home early just because I'm going to die here without it.
Dobbs walked up. His large, tall body cast a shadow over Reese. They have Vegemite. Have you tried that?
He pushed the wireframe glasses farther up the bridge of his nose. Is that like peanut butter?
Paul walked up at that moment. No, Vegemite is disgusting paste that tastes salty, malty, and bitter.
He took a stab at Dobbs, his Australian friend, and didn't actually intend to engage Reese in conversation. She didn't want to talk to him either, so she walked off, leaving Paul and Dobbs to discuss whether peanut butter or Vegemite held the honor as the most disgusting food on the planet. She wandered into the office and decided to work on the dailies.
Bloody hell!
Claire threw her pencil at the wall.
What's wrong?
A potential customer I've been working on decided on another destination. We only have one group of tourists on the books right now, and that's next week. We have nothing after that. We need more customers. The students are good money while they're enrolled, but they don't leave when they're finished. They stay for months, and once their instruction is done, they get to dive at a very good discount. It's killing our bottom line.
Is the shop in trouble?
Claire glanced at her and then looked around to make sure no one lurked within earshot.
Not really, but sort of. Like I said, the students are good money, but once they're done, it would be best if we could just keep a steady stream of real paying customers coming in. Right now, I think Paul is subsidizing the shop from his personal bank account.
The thought of the shop not doing well made Reese sad. She'd fallen in love with it and the island. Except for Paul and maybe Shelley, she really liked it here.
So how do we get more tourists?
Claire shook her head.
I don't know. Paul is supposed to be some toff, the dog's bollocks in the business world, but for some reason he hasn't put his heart into this. He would rather dive, ride jet skis, surf, parasail, and shag every woman on the island. You name it, anything but work. Oh, did I mention shag every woman on the island? They both laughed.
Later, Rhys thought about what Claire had said as she wrote the daily post for the shop's blog. She still needed to post the dive pictures for the day, one of her dailies. While she waited for the computer to load the pictures, she scrolled through past posts, the ones Paul had posted before she took over. Every post looked the same, a picture of some sea creature, a picture of a wreck, a picture here and there of divers diving. She looked the website over and started surfing the internet and various social media sites. She went back to the shop's site and read through the comments. She noticed one past customer, a female, had posted a comment with a picture. Rhys stared at the picture for a minute. Paul stood next to the woman, his arm around her, and there was no doubt in Rhys's mind that he had slept with her. The comment read, "This is my dive master. Can you see why I can't wait to go back to Paradise Divers?" Rhys rolled her eyes. Nothing else stood out. She searched the internet again. She searched other dive shop sites and studied them. There were a few things she thought would be nice to incorporate into Paradise's web image, but she was under strict instructions from Mr. Grumpy Pants on how he wanted it done. She sighed. Rhys walked into her apartment, happy to be home. It had been a particularly stressful day, so she'd left the shop a little early. She strolled into the kitchen and opened the fridge, trying to decide what she wanted to do for dinner. She settled on a quesadilla in hopes of saving a few pennies. She turned and noticed Regina's laptop on the table. Regina had apparently left her camera to upload pictures to the computer, and Rhys watched as pictures of Paul flashed one after another on the screen. She moved to the table, sat down, and watched mindlessly at the sheer number of pictures running across the screen. When it finished, the file sat open, revealing a folder devoted entirely to Paul. Regina walked in and froze.
"What are you doing home too early?"
"You mean so early?" Tracy wasn't around to correct Regina's English, and Rhys couldn't believe how easily she'd stepped into the role. She pointed to the